¡Vamos, amigos! God, I feel like I could have gone for another 40 seconds. What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Duke back and better than ever with another episode of the Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 48. Going to cover a large range of topics, may go a little bit long today, but as always, I am your host, Duke. You can find me on Twitter at DukeDFS. We are brought to you by Elite Fantasy and EliteSportsBetting.com. It's where you can find all of my daily fantasy and betting information. We also now have a Super Bowl preview out, props guide out. So if you sign up for the weekly VIP betting package, you'll have access to that. Of course, the best value on both sites is the yearly plan. You pay one price, one low price, access to every expert and every sport 365 days a year. We've had a wild month on the sports betting side for soccer. It seems like it's been all or nothing this month. We follow up a 5-0 day with an 0-3 day. We don't have too many, you know, 2-2, 3-3 days like we did today, Wednesday. But of course, all of it evens out over time. But one thing's for sure, we're going to have a damn good time doing it. And we're going to make money long-term. So get over there and check it out. Hell, on Saturday, we're betting the freaking Women's Australian Professional League. Vamos, Melbourne Victory. We're 1-0. Before we get into the podcast, I do have a special announcement. As I've probably said 200 times throughout all the different social media platforms in this podcast, I'm going to have a daughter. She'll be here any day now. The wife is due February 8th, but is already getting all the weird feelings. So what I did for you guys was record a special evergreen podcast with none other than MLB model himself, the alcoholic. We talk about his entrance into the sports betting world, the future of gambling, and how to build a model for sports betting. So it's kind of can't miss. You got to do it. Humor him too. Go tell him he did a great job when it does come out. It'll likely be either next week or the week after. I'd love for it to be episode 50, which would be out on the 12th for a number of reasons. Number one, the baby would keep cooking. I still have my freedom. And then number two, it's just kind of cool to have the special guest on episode 50. So look, we're going to discuss some interesting transfer news that takes place, you know, throughout January. The transfer window is still open. We're going to do an extended preview of the EPL slate, a little bit more than we usually do. But, of course, since the last time you and I talked on this podcast, we had the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gigi, and seven others in a helicopter crash. And Kobe meant so much to so many people. I was actually in the soccer chat room on EliteSportsBetting.com when the news broke. And Twitter. I mean, I love Twitter. I spend way too much time on Twitter, but for me, Twitter is what you make of it. And I use it as, number one, a way to just hang out with friends and shoot the shit, but I use it as a news source, first and foremost. Rarely do I find out about anything relatively close to important outside of Twitter. I'm not watching the news, you know, I'm not waiting for the next morning and reading the newspaper. This is a real-time source for information. And like anything, when I saw the news, and when it was breaking and I saw TMZ, like most of you probably, I was hoping it was fake. We do get it so quick. And there is this rush to be first that I was trying to confirm if it was real. And man, I went from putting four bets in the bet pack, ready to hang out with subs for 3 hours, into several hours of somber thoughts and memories. And then we find out his daughter is in the chopper as well with him. And I immediately thought about how scared they must have been, how worried Kobe must have been about the safety of his daughter. And how he couldn't protect her. It's tragic, but my hope is that it was sudden. This wasn't a situation where they knew they were going down. And I'm glad this podcast wasn't due on Monday. I've had a few days to reflect on the accident, you know, what it means to Kobe and his family, what it means to me and my family, what it means in general. And to be completely honest, I tend to kind of lack empathy when a celebrity passes away. I honestly can't remember the last time someone famous died and I even really cared at all. Which is probably bad to say. I mean, it's sad and all, but it didn't affect me. It didn't change my life. This one was a gut punch. And there's no doubt he's one of the best basketball players of all time. By all accounts, he was a dedicated father who loved his family. And it's been confirmed in countless stories since how driven he was in all aspects of life. Not the least of which was his passion for the beautiful game, football or soccer, you know, as we call it here in the States. This is a Renaissance man. He spoke English, Italian, and Spanish. He's a soccer fan before it was cool to be a soccer fan, largely due to his exposure to the game when his dad was playing professional basketball in Italy. He's a longtime supporter of AC Milan. He's boys with all the famous players, Ronaldinho, Messi, Ronaldo, you name it. They know of Kobe. They've met Kobe. They've hung out with Kobe. I saw an awesome story the other day about how Kobe Bryant at the Olympics happened to be sitting in the cafeteria and looked over and saw Messi. You know, the Olympics, everyone gets together in the same, you know, food hall, all the teams, Kobe playing for the U.S. men's basketball team, Messi playing for the Argentinian Olympian team. What's Kobe do? He's Kobe. He walks over, sits down, and just starts talking to Messi. What a stud. Neymar, of course, gave his touching tribute after his goal for PSG, showing the numbers 2 and 4 with his fingers, clasping his hands together in a praying motion and pointing towards the heavens. Sergio Ramos wore a Kobe jersey to training for Real Madrid, who took a moment of silence. Not just a moment, a whole minute of silence to honor the loss at the start of a training session. Cristiano Ronaldo paid a touching tribute to Instagram to his 200 million followers that finished with, quote, RIP legend. I say all that to say nothing is a given, now especially, but just in general. I make it a rule to tell people close to me that I love them. I'm about to welcome this little one into the world. I'll tell her every single day that I love her. I tell my wife every day that I love her, because you never know when it'll be the last time you see them. It's super sad, but let's honor the big man with a hell of a show the rest of the way. RIP, Kobe Bean Bryant. And look, there's no great way to transition from that to everything else we're going to talk about, so let's just say it. I hate Ed Woodward, okay? I'm not, let's go burn his house down level of hatred like we apparently saw this week, but I'm not a big fan. Dude doesn't know how to do his job on the footballing side of things. And saying that, two things. Number one, I'm not 100% sure that this whole throw flares at Ed Woodward's house isn't a hoax. And number two, vamos Bruno Fernandes, baby! It looks like he's coming to United. The January transfer window nearly over, but supposedly Bruno Fernandes is coming to United. Hell of a signing for them. It looks like United perhaps got raked over the coals, end up giving Sporting exactly what they asked for. But who cares at this point? Just get him in the door, sign the contract, get him in a United kit. My question is, if that was the deal that they wanted all along, why didn't we do this 3 weeks ago? But I digress. As much as I want to make this one, this is not a Man United podcast. There are 19 other teams in the Prem, so let's look at what they've done. We'll go team by team here with their January transfer activity. Arsenal, of course, brought back Nketia from Leeds and signed Pablo Mari today on loan. They addressed two needs. One, they get some depth and quality in the attack. I think he's better than Reece Nelson, who's been playing quite a bit, Joe Willock, a lot of guys, hopefully some help there. And then, of course, we have Paro Mari, who is supposedly better than Mustafi and David Luiz. No duh on the first one, right? Mustafi's a donkey. We'll see about Luiz. But by the way, I noticed those two mentioned. Does that mean Socrates is like good or something? Why wasn't he mentioned in that sentence? I think Luiz is probably their best center back at the time. These two Brazilians can pair up and form a decent, two center backs back there. Certainly goes a long way for Arteta and our Arsenal moving forward. Aston Villa brought in some experience. Danny Drinkwater, title-winning midfielder with Leicester, obviously, since moved to Chelsea, didn't play a bunch, was with Burnley, didn't play there, and now is over at Villa. Isn't much more than a link between A and B, you know, backline, frontline, but Burnley do need that a little bit. They miss that a little bit. So perhaps he can be a bit of a shrewd signing there. Pep Reina also come in, taking over the number one goalkeeping spot. So really you have, you know, Drinkwater hopefully filling in for McGinn if he's out long-term. And even though I love Tom Heaton, Pepe Reina has the experience, been all over the globe, and was a quality keeper. So perhaps a couple shrewd signings there for Aston Villa, who were trying to stay up. Currently in 16th place, outside the relegation zone. Good for them, because I love the way they play and try to play. Now, three teams who didn't do a damn thing. Bournemouth, Brighton, and Burnley. No moves to discuss. Like we mentioned, Drinkwater leaving Burnley is about the only news, even though he didn't have an impact at all. Chelsea, yet to make a signing. And if you listen to Frank Lampard, Fat Frank, there may not be one coming. He sounds like a beaten man. They're coming off the transfer ban. You'd think they'd have money available, moves to make. I think Victor Moses was sold. I just saw him playing for Inter today. I think he was still property of Chelsea. Olivier Giroud is rumored to be on his way out as well. Danny Drinkwater, like I mentioned, over to Villa. No incomings for Chelsea, and they could really use some help. Mason Mount does seem like he's on the way back a little bit. Who's behind Tammy Abraham if Olivier Giroud leaves? Batshuayi, I guess. I don't know. They could have really used some reinforcements there. Crystal Palace have a new frontman in Cenk Tosun. He's been there for a little bit. We've actually talked about him some. he's impressed me more than I thought he would in this role. He's a decent hold-up man, more of a player to keep them up than vault them to a place in Europe. Hanging on to Wilf Zaha was the prize, and it looks like they're going to do that. Today, shocking news. Everton were subject to a rumored $100 million bid for Richarlison. My first thought, take it. Take it. I know the market's gone crazy, but why is Richarlison worth $100 million? But here's the issue. The window is almost over. What can they get in that time if they do this deal, especially when other teams know you're flush with cash? Everton, only 7 points from the relegation zone, just absolutely collapsed against Newcastle to throw away 2 points when they had three in the bag. They need to keep their talent. So bravo to them for saying no to the big payday. Nothing from Leicester. Don't expect anything from them. Sitting fine in third place. Yep, third place. Liverpool did their business early with the signing of Minamino from Salzburg in a very, very cheap £7 million deal. Once again, Liverpool are playing chess. Been working on this deal for, I think they said, 3 years and got it over the line here. And I've watched them play twice for Liverpool, once from the start, once off the bench. Wasn't overly impressed either time, to be honest. But let's let him settle in before we pass judgment, because he was quality for Salzburg in their system. Got a big task in front of him to unseat Salah, Mane, or Firmino. But with Mane potentially out, perhaps he slides into that role that Origi played today in their big win over West Ham. City look like they're staying pat, but are rumored to be looking for defensive reinforcements. Newcastle, Lone FC, CEO of loans, Newcastle United, brought in Valentino Lazaro, who's in on loan from Inter Milan, kind of a right winger, right wing back. If they play that, you know, 5-3-2 system, or 5-4-1, I guess is what it turns into. Add some pace to the right side, but they already have pace with DeAndre Yedlin. So I'm not sure what the plan is with him. Perhaps an alternate to Saint-Maximin, who is electric, but gives the ball away half the time. Nabil Bentaleb, already playing for Newcastle a couple games. Ball-playing center midfielder from Schalke on loan. Has a history in the Premier League. Left the Prem, went to the Bundesliga. Decent player. I think he'll help the midfield. Probably a little help for Shelvey as he's out for a bit. But then just today, it was announced Danny Rose would join them on loan for the rest of the season to fill that vacant left-back role after the nasty Jetro Willems injury. So I kind of like all three of these moves, to be honest. Don't quite get how Lazaro fits exactly. Might be an upgrade on Yedlin. Could be reinforcements for Saint-Maximin, but I like Bentaleb in that ball-playing role there. So how quickly they can integrate to the team is going to be the key. Loan signings in late January, I mean, hit or miss, right? But at least they're trying. Norwich brought in Dude and Rupp from the Bundesliga to try to save their Premier League life. They won't. Sheffield taking a flyer on formerly a future England star, who I think has been mentioned a couple times on this podcast, Jack Rodwell. From the streets into Sheffield United. Look, if he sees the field, I'll be shocked. Kind of a low risk, potentially high reward, because he was quality at one time. But the current pair in their midfield is working just fine. So I think Rodwell, perhaps more depth than anything there. Southampton, not doing anything. Tottenham have been busy. Out goes Christian Eriksen to Inter. In comes Gedson Fernandez and Steve Bergwijn, which was just announced and confirmed today, Wednesday. I really like both of these signings, depending on how Jose wants to play. Gedson Fernandez is not a like-for-like replacement for Christian Eriksen, but fits Jose Mourinho better. Jose likes those two-way players, those guys who are going to work their socks off. Eriksen's more of a floater. Get me in space, let me create. Gedson more box-to-box, so I don't mind that signing at all. Also younger, much younger, and on a bigger contract, longer contract, I should say. Bergwijn, an electric attacking talent that will provide instant improvement on the right side of their attack, which has been their weak side. Son coming off the left, Kane through the middle before his injury. Dele Alli looks rejuvenated. They've been heavily relying on Lucas Moura, who's probably going to move more into the center of the park, playing more of that number nine where Harry Kane used to be, and Bergwijn off the right side. Dynamic Dutch player. I'm always a touch nervous about players coming from the Eredivisie straight to the Prem and having an impact. We saw the likes of Memphis Depay, who won Player of the Year, scored a billion goals, right? Comes over to Man United, struggles to adjust. They play a similar type of game, but I do think with the way Tottenham play, maybe not right away, but by the end of the season, he's going to be clicking and providing an impact off the right side. So I do like what Tottenham's done there. Watford brought in an attacking prospect in Pusetto. Still don't know much about him. Only seen him a couple times in very limited action. Haven't seen a whole lot there. West Ham brought in Darren Randolph, a goalkeeper. More cover for Lucas Fabianski than taking over the number one shirt. But they brought in Thomas Susek from Slavia Prague. I think he could be one of the signings of the window in the Premier League. He's much better than Mark Noble, and I think he's better than the English media's darling, Declan Rice. And West Ham for sure needed some serious upgrading in the middle of the park, and this big man will provide that. Last but not least, Wolves brought in 19-year-old prospect from Barcelona in Leonardo Campagna. To be honest, don't know a ton about him. He's a big man at 6'2", looks more like one for the future than immediate help. So look, we still do have a couple days left in the window. Could there be some more signings? For sure. Right now, I really like what Newcastle, West Ham, Tottenham, and Man United, if they get this deal over the line with Bruno Fernandes, have done. Everyone else, we'll have to see. Next in line from that group was probably Arsenal, who could be upgraded drastically if Mori does work out at the back. So that is our transfer roundup for this week. January transfer, always a crapshoot. Just go back through the years. Who are the big January transfers that have really made an impact? You think of Virgil van Dijk, obviously, is probably the best of all time, coming in from Southampton to Liverpool, revolutionized the way they played. Manja Vidic, I believe, was a January transfer for Man United. Just not a ton of quality moving back and forth. But with Bergwijn, Bruno Fernandes, you know, there could be a couple big, Mori, if he works, a couple big signings that have moved and changed hands here as we head into February to close out the year. All right, should we talk a little EPL weekend action? We have a six-game slate starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday. As always, we'll head to Vegas, look at the lines, and give you some game previews to get you ready for the action. Not going to talk too much about DK salaries and who we're looking for there, just more of an overall perspective on how these games are going to go and give you some information. So let's start with our favorite team, Bournemouth, plus 105 at home, hosting Aston Villa, 255. There, 2.5 total, minus 140 juice on the over. I'm guessing that number is going to move a little bit closer towards even money as we get towards the weekend. Josh King is out. Philip Billing is 50%. For Villa, the usual two, John McGinn's out and Wesley are out up top. And we say Bournemouth, our favorite team. What are we doing with them? I mean, my tactic for a while now has been to avoid them like the plague. That's been usually profitable. Then they go and beat the brakes off of Brighton. Granted, their first two goals were a bit against the run of play, but it was a good performance by Bournemouth, which they haven't had for 3 months. Then they go out in the FA Cup and they lose to Arsenal. It was a competitive match. And even though I prefer Villa in that matchup, Bournemouth rightly home favorites here at home. I love the way Villa play. Six in the Prem with 507 crosses through 24 matches. They're in the top half of the league in shots. They've been in fantastic form, considering for them where they sit in the table. They won a dramatic 91st-minute winner against Leicester midweek to qualify for the finals in the EFL Cup. And if you happen to see those celebrations, it's everything that's right in football. Number one, coaches, players going absolutely apeshit on the sidelines. Hilarious. Number two, as the final whistle goes, I think it was Mike Dean in the middle, our favorite referee. He blows the whistle, tweet, 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 immediately is already pointing to his far side lino, saying, let's get off the field, they're about to rush it. Sure enough, bam, stands empty, crowds are on the field, just like we used to see in the old days in the black and white pictures. Big win for Villa there, heading to Wembley, I believe, in the EFL Cup Finals. Good for them. But for this matchup, I think Bournemouth are better than they're standing in the table, but they're so inconsistent that it's tough for me to trust them with my money. So no bets on them at this moment. Like I said, I think that total will come down a touch from minus 140 over on the 2.5, that might be where we look to attack. My concern, as always, is who is going to score for Bournemouth. Good to see Callum Wilson get on the score sheet last week. Perhaps he can carry that over in this week. Game number two, Crystal Palace hosting Sheffield. Crystal Palace, a home underdog, which I might do a podcast on towards the end of the year, home underdogs in the Premier League, plus 210 to Sheffield United, plus 150 away. Low total here, two, with juice on the over and the under. Minus 105 on the over, minus 115 on the under. Same crew for Palace are out, as usual. Townsend, Schlupp, Benteke, Milivojevic. Van Aanholt's out. Sacco's out. Huge issues at the back there. For Sheffield, just McGoldrick is a doubt, who's not great, but again, the tip of the spear on that defensive setup for Sheffield. So, I mean, look at it this way. Look at the stats. Look at the table. Are Sheffield United playing Liverpool, Man City, or Leicester? If the answer is no, they have a pretty damn good chance of getting at least a point. They haven't lost a game on the road to any other team in the table outside of those three. They beat Crystal Palace at home 1-0. So it's easy to look at their form and see three losses in the last five. But look, Sheffield United, to those three losses, that was Man City, and Liverpool. The last time they lost to a team not named in the top three above, December 5th, Newcastle at home, which is a bit fluky as well. And look, I really liked how Palace looked against City. But what an egg they laid against Southampton. I'm not sure what to make of Crystal Palace. They're almost becoming my new Bournemouth. At home, 83% of their games have gone under 2.5 goals. So knowing how these two teams play, I say we're heading for another game under three. Obviously, with a low total, it's looking that way too. 0-0, 1-0, or 1-1 seems likely. I can't really pick a winner here, so let's wait for Saturday and team news before we make any bets. Next, Liverpool, -345, rightfully big home favorites against Southampton, +900. We have a three total, -125 on the over, +105 on the under. Liverpool, just another impressive win today, 2-0 versus West Ham away. It sounds like Mane is going to miss this match again. Today, Origi came into the fold, but went off, I think, with cramps. Lallana and Shaqiri are questionable. Like I said, this could be Minamino's big chance to start off that left side of the attacking three. Could also push Oxlade-Chamberlain up, who scored a nice goal today. Bring in Fabinho. A lot of different things for Jurgen Klopp to consider. For Southampton, troubles at the back. Cedric Suarez is out. Valerie's out. Vestergaard look like they're going to be out. Valerie and Vestergaard, slight doubts to come back. Most likely those three miss. Not great, especially Valerie, who can play on the right or the left. And you consider the opponent. Liverpool are insane. What else can we say about them at this point? 14 straight wins in the Premier League, invincible at home. And they aren't blowing teams out this year, but they've almost never felt like they're going to lose. They have 54 goals through 23 games. Now 55, I guess, or 56, I guess, with the two they scored today. They fired the third most shots at nearly 16 shots per game. I like Liverpool here, obviously. But here's the caveat. Southampton have won four straight away matches. Those matches were against Crystal Palace, Leicester, Chelsea, and Villa. Four decently tough matches. They've scored in seven straight matches. They did play Liverpool tough the first time. It was a 2-1 game or 2-1 win for Liverpool in the reverse fixture. If Southampton can score an early goal, perhaps Liverpool choke this away and draw or maybe only win by one. So I'll be looking to more the goal line to see if we can get some decent odds on Southampton +1 or +1.5 even with this size of this line and maybe attacking it that way from a betting perspective. From a DFS perspective, how do you not grab some Liverpool here, right? They're going to be expensive. That's likely where we head. Next up, Lone FC, Newcastle, +120 home favorites. Why? They're playing crappy Norwich City, +230 on the road. 2.5 total, +105 on the over, -125 on the over, or on the under, excuse me. Shelvey, Manquillo, Willems, Gale, Lejeune, Key, Dummett, all out for Newcastle, the walking wounded. Andy Carroll could come back, but only about 50% there. So we may see some fresh faces. Like I mentioned, Bentaleb already getting minutes for Newcastle there. On the Norwich side, Buendia and Cantwell potentially going to be back, which would be massive. Cantwell more likely than Buendia to make it back for this match. Newcastle absolutely broke my heart with two late goals by Lejeune to snag a point from the mouth of defeat against Everton there. Ruined a bet. Thank you very much. But I think that's kind of a decent metaphor for this Newcastle team. Not a great team by any means, but they seem to be scraping together points out of left field. Matt Ritchie's back. He helps for distributions. Willems out is not great, but Danny Rose can slot right in. You don't need a ton of time on the training pitch to slot in at left back or left wing back. Joelinton, not very good at soccer. Doesn't help us either. But the good news, Norwich stink. Bottom of the table for a reason. They also only picked up a total of 4 points on the road. So if it were any other team than Newcastle, I'd say load up on their opponent. But let's be cautious because Newcastle, not exactly a wagon on the attacking side of things. Going to be an interesting game there. One I definitely won't have a bet on. Simply too unpredictable. If I had a lean, it'd be Newcastle to win. Don't want to touch that total. Especially if Buendia and Cantwell happen to miss. Well, we might put a bet in on Newcastle. Otherwise, likely a no play. Two games left to talk about. will go to Watford, plus 185, home dogs, slight home dogs to Everton, plus 150. 2.5 total, even money on the over, minus 120 on the under. Just Cleverley and Ismaili Sarr are going to miss for Watford. Femenia, Welbeck, and Hughes are questionable. Everton look to be relatively healthy. No major injuries there. Actually, great to see Gomez back on the training pitch after that horrible ankle injury suffered in the tackle by Son prior to Christmas. Cannot believe he's back so soon. Good to see that there. But for Watford, the cracks are starting to show again. Look, if you compare this recent run they've been on to their entire season, you're saying Watford are on fire. However, there are signs that the new manager bump is starting to wear out. Back at home should be an encouraging spot. They haven't lost at home since November 23rd. I'm very cautious about Watford. That's all I'm going to say there. But for Everton, how do you bounce back from that deflating collapse against Newcastle? 93 minutes, they were brilliant, and then they give it up in the last two. Ancelotti football was in full effect. Look, frankly, it was all Everton, save for the end of the half. So I think you just keep it exactly how it was. Perhaps that's our takeaway, is just finish 95 minutes instead of 93. Strong 35 minutes to start. 10 minutes to close out the half is where we need to focus. That was at home. This is away. Bit of a toss-up here for me, hence the line. Watford, I think, is a paper tiger at this point. And Everton has shown that perhaps they don't have the backbone to hold on to result late. If I had to pick a winner here, I'd pick Everton. Could be heading for a draw here as well. Last game, then we'll get you out of here. West Ham hosting Brighton. West Ham plus 150. Brighton plus 180. 2.5 total, plus 115 on the over, minus 115 on the under. Quite a few unders and low totals on this slate. Even more of a reason why Liverpool ownership will be so popular. For West Ham, no Fredericks, Yarmolenko, Anderson, or Antonio. Four big misses for them. Brighton will miss literally big people. Dan Byrne and Shane Duffy are out. Two big misses at the back for them. So I have a strong stance here. I don't love West Ham, even at home. I hate Brighton away. They were decent at the start of the Bournemouth game, but folded like a cheap tent at the first sign of adversity. So can West Ham cause them any adversity? That's the question for me. Snodgrass played today, I believe. He'll be a late fitness test. Fabianski should be back in goal. Anderson Fredericks, like we said, confirmed out. Antonio's out. Who's going to cause issues for the Brighton back line? Holler needs distribution. Lanzini isn't great. I mean, what are we doing? But how bad are Brighton away? How about 0.67 points per game bad? How about 0.92 goals scored per game bad? How about 1.75 goals conceded bad? 67% of their matches have gone over 2.5 goals away from home, and they've won only two of those against Arsenal and Watford. The first time these two teams played, they drew 1-1, and I would lean towards a similar result here, if not a West Ham win. Brighton's not great, especially on the road. West Ham has injuries up front, not sure who's going to cause them problems. My worry is, can we rely on either team to put goals on the board? So, a lot of indecisions, a lot of things are going to come down to team news on Saturday morning. Even more of a reason for you to get over to elitefantasy.com and sign up for our packages over there. As always, I'll be in the chat room an hour prior to lock, helping you through all of your DFS needs. Big article coming out Thursday from my Back of the Net EPL preview. Cheat sheets out Friday. FPL article out Friday. And we'll do a Sunday Funday article on Saturday talking about Sunday's slate as well. And that's going to do it for this week's Talking Soccer podcast. Back next week. Good luck with all your bets and DFS, and just in general, just in life. Go hug a loved one. Adios.